All right, so you've all been sending in your reading lists,
Okay.
and today we're going to do a deep dive into a pretty important question, at least according to Jeff Bernard.
Okay.
Can a move back to the political center help, kind of bridge some of the divides that we're seeing everywhere,
Great,
right?
great.
And we're going to use three sources you guys sent in.
Yeah.
We're going to look at Bernard's analysis of tariffs and why he thinks they're a bad idea. We've got his bigger picture argument for this new center political framework.
Right.
And then we've got an overview of U.S. fiscal policy.
Okay, excellent.
So kind of a big mix of stuff here, but it all seems to tie together, at least from my first read through it.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the things that really jumps out at me is that Bernard sees this a way forward, right? Like a more cooperative kind of centrist approach. But he's also worried about all these other forces kind of pulling us apart, right? So media, everyone wants to get paid for their clicks, right?
Right,
Like
right.
that whole system is kind of driving us towards extremes, I think, is what he's saying.
Yeah, and he's very concerned about that. And he's got some pretty strong opinions about the way that recent administrations have acted and how both sides of the political spectrum have responded. So there's a lot to unpack there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe a good starting point would be like to just kind of zoom out a little bit and talk about Bernard's big idea, right?
Yeah.
This new center political framework.
Yeah, absolutely.
What exactly is he picturing here? Like, what does that actually look like, and how does it connect to these very specific concerns he has about, the economy, about spending, about tariffs, all that stuff?
So essentially what Bernard is advocating for is a move away from these ideological extremes that we see dominating the political discourse.
Hmm.
He feels like we're so polarized right now. Yeah.
That it's preventing any kind of progress, any kind of constructive problem
Yeah.
solving.
Right.
And I think when you look at his writings on tariffs, for instance, where he really believes that they're economically damaging,
Right.
and his sort of implicit critique of fiscal
Yeah.
policies,
Yeah.
you see this consistent thread
Okay.
where he's really calling for a more pragmatic centrist approach that's grounded in evidence, in long-term consideration.
Right.
And he feels like we've kind of abandoned that in favor of ideologically driven or politically expedient
Yeah,
actions.
absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he's saying we need to get back to basics a little bit.
In a way, yeah.
Right? Like what actually works, not just what sounds good.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's dig into the tariffs thing a little bit more, right?
Okay.
Because I mean, that's clearly a big piece of this for him.
I mean, the article he wrote is even titled, Why Economists Consider Tariffs a Bad Economic Policy. So can you just kind of break it down for us? Like, what are his main arguments?
Sure, yeah.
Why are tariffs so bad in his view?
So Bernard is very clear that the overwhelming consensus, at least as he sees it among economists, is that tariffs are detrimental to the economy.
Okay.
And he argues that they distort markets, they lead to inefficiencies, and they create all these negative ripple effects that often outweigh any intended benefits.
Right.
And he lays out eight key reasons why economists kind of tend to hold this perspective.
Eight reasons. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's try to go through them one by one if we can.
Okay.
So starting with the most basic one, I guess. Why do economists generally dislike tariffs?
So the first big issue is that tariffs increase prices for consumers.
Right.
It's a direct pass-through, right? You have this tax on imported goods, so those goods become more expensive. But it often doesn't stop there, right? Because domestic producers, now that they're facing less competition from those imports, they can also raise their prices.
Right.
So you have this kind of this overall increase in the cost of living that hits everyone.
Yeah.
But And Bernard points this out, it tends to disproportionately affect people with lower incomes
Okay.
because they spend a larger percentage of their income on those basic necessities.
Right, so it's like a double whammy for them.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, so that's the immediate impact.
Yeah.
What about the kind of the broader long-term effects?
Right. So the second point that Bernard highlights is that tariffs disrupt market efficiency
Okay.
and ultimately hinder economic growth.
Right.
And he brings up this concept of comparative advantage.
Okay.
You know, the idea that countries should focus on what they're naturally good at producing. And that leads to a more efficient global economy.
Yeah.
But tariffs act like these artificial barriers
yeah.
that prevent that specialization. They force countries to produce goods that they might not be well suited for.
Right.
So you have this misallocation of resources, which means less overall productivity and,
right.
and slower economic expansion for everyone.
So it's not just about, like, you know, one country winning and another country losing. It's making the whole pie smaller.
Exactly. Yeah. It's shrinking the pie for everyone.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what's the next big concern?
So the third major concern is the risk of retaliation and trade wars.
Okay.
Right. So when one country imposes tariffs, its trading partners often feel compelled to respond with their own tariffs.
Right.
So you get this tit for tat cycle of escalating trade barriers.
Yeah.
And Bernard points to the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act in the 1930s as this really stark historical example of how these actions can severely contract global trade and worsen economic downturns.
Right. It's almost like everyone's trying to protect themselves, but they end up hurting each other in the process.
Exactly. Yeah. They all end up worse off.
Yeah.
And he also mentions the recent trade tensions between the U.S. and China.
Right.
As a contemporary illustration of this.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, I remember when those trade disputes were happening, everyone was really anxious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So what's the fourth reason? Why else are tariffs a problem?
So fourth, Bernard argues that tariffs often end up hurting domestic businesses and workers.
Okay, but how? Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't the whole point to protect local industries?
Right. So that might be the intention.
Yeah.
But the reality is that a lot of U.S. companies rely on imported components and raw materials in their production processes.
Okay.
So when you put tariffs on those imports,
right,
it increases the cost of those inputs,
mm-hmm.
and that makes domestic manufacturing more expensive
right.
and less competitive in the global market.
Okay.
He uses the example of tariffs on steel, for example, potentially raising costs for American car manufacturers, which could lead to them becoming less competitive and potentially even reducing their workforce or moving production elsewhere.
Wow. So it's really complicated.
It is. Yeah. It's a very complex web of interconnected industries.
Okay, right. It's almost like you can't just look at one piece in isolation. You have to think about the whole global supply chain.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Okay. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So we're more than halfway through the list now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the fifth reason that economists are generally skeptical of tariffs?
So fifth, tariffs tend to reduce overall trade and economic cooperation between countries.
Okay.
Right. And international trade isn't just about exchanging goods.
Right.
It also fosters interdependence and it can build stronger diplomatic relationships.
Okay.
So tariffs, by erecting barriers, can strain those relationships
right.
and lead to political friction.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bernard also notes that restricting imports can discourage foreign investment, which is a vital source of capital and innovation for a lot of economies. So it can really stifle the flow of ideas and technologies that drive progress.
It's almost like closing yourself off, right? Like putting up walls.
In a way, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so number six on the list.
Okay.
Why else are economists often wary of tariffs?
So sixth, Bernard states that tariffs are not an effective tool for fixing trade deficits.
Okay.
Right? So that's when a country imports more than it exports.
Right. Right.
He explains that trade deficits are influenced by a whole range of macroeconomic factors, including exchange rates, investment flows, consumer spending habits, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So tariffs might shift where a country sources its imports
or
just reduce the overall volume of trade.
Right.
But they don't necessarily lead to a fundamental rebalancing of exports and imports.
Okay.
In fact, by triggering those retaliatory tariffs we talked about and increasing costs for domestic businesses, they could even worsen the trade deficit in some scenarios.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's not this direct cause and effect relationship.
So it's not just a simple fix.
No, not at all.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, what's next on the list?
So seventh, Bernard points out the risk of tariffs leading to what's called crony capitalism and rent seeking.
Okay, can you explain those terms a little bit?
Yeah, so basically, when governments use tariffs to shield specific domestic industries from foreign competition,
right.
it can create opportunities for businesses with close political connections to benefit unfairly
okay.
at the expense of consumers and other businesses.
So it's kind of like picking winners and losers, but not based on merit.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And these favored industries might then spend more resources lobbying for continued protection.
Right.
Rather than focusing on innovation and becoming more efficient.
Right. So it's almost like it's distorting the whole system.
Exactly. It distorts the playing field.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, last but not least, what's the eighth reason?
So eighth, Bernard highlights the potential for tariffs imposed by developed countries to significantly harm developing countries.
Okay.
Right. So these tariffs can restrict access to crucial export markets for developing nations.
Right.
Preventing them from specializing in industries where they might have a natural advantage.
Right.
And earning vital foreign currency.
Yeah.
So this can really hinder their economic development.
Right.
And perpetuate poverty.
Okay.
And create a situation of dependence.
So it's kind of like kicking them while they're down almost.
Yeah, in a way.
Okay, that's pretty sobering.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so that was a really comprehensive overview of the economic arguments against tariffs.
Yeah.
At least, from Bernard's perspective.
Right.
Now, he also talks about the political dimension of all this, right?
Right.
He talks about, politics becoming this team sport.
Yeah.
And the spread of what he calls uneducated opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he see this influencing the whole tariff debate?
So Bernard is quite critical of the way that we're talking about tariffs.
Okay.
He thinks it's become very polarized and mm-hmm. often misinformed.
Right.
He observes this tendency on both sides of the political spectrum to permeate these simplified narratives.
Yeah.
And sometimes just inaccurate information to rally their supporters.
Mm.
And this is happening particularly within their preferred media outlets.
Right. All right.
And he specifically points to conservative media as a significant source of what he considers blatantly false propaganda.
Wow.
Regarding the benefits of tariffs.
Yeah.
And he sees this as being driven by this need for online engagement
mm-hmm.
and reinforcing existing ideological viewpoints.
Right.
So he sees this as a major obstacle to a more reasoned and evidence-based discussion of economic policy.
Yeah, it's almost like everyone's talking past each other.
Exactly.
Nobody's actually listening. Okay, that's a little depressing.
It is a little bit, yeah.
Now, there's one thing that I found kind of curious.
Okay.
He mentions, almost like a sliver of a positive effect of tariffs.
Right.
Related to Mexican cartel activity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, yeah.
Like, what's he getting at there?
So Bernard acknowledges this very limited and indirect positive consequence.
Okay.
Where he suggests that the Mexican government wanting to avoid those significant tariffs on their exports to the U.S. may have increased their efforts to crack down on drug cartels in certain areas.
Okay.
But he's very quick to emphasize that this is a very narrow and unintended side effect.
Right.
And he strongly argues that the only real and sustainable solution to drug consumption in the U.S. lies in reducing domestic demand.
Okay.
He doesn't see tariffs as a legitimate or effective tool for addressing the drug problem.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've heard a lot from Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously it's important to present a balanced view here.
Right.
And the text we have also includes Peter Navarro's perspective.
Okay.
And he's actually pro-tariffs.
Right. Yeah.
So, what are his main justifications? Like, why does he think tariffs are a good idea?
So the text outlines three core arguments from Navarro in favor of tariffs.
Okay.
Firstly, he believes that tariffs will inflict economic pain on China.
Okay.
And compel them to alter their trade practices in a way that benefits the U.S.
Right.
Secondly, he argues that tariffs will act as an incentive for companies to bring manufacturing jobs back to American soil.
Okay.
And thirdly, he posits that reducing the U.S. trade deficit through the implementation of tariffs will ultimately strengthen the overall American economy.
Okay, so those are kind of the main points in favor of tariffs.
Yeah.
But the text also includes an economic analysis that challenges these very claims.
Mm-hmm.
So can you walk us through that a little bit? Like, what are the counterarguments?
Sure, yeah.
So first of all, Navarro says that tariffs primarily hurt China.
Right.
What does the analysis say about that?
So the analysis points out that while there might be some initial negative impact on the Chinese economy, the tariffs are largely paid by American consumers and businesses in the form of higher prices.
Right.
Additionally, China has various ways to adapt,
hopefully,
such as devaluing its currency or finding alternative export markets.
Right.
Furthermore, retaliatory tariffs imposed by China have demonstrably hurt specific sectors of the U.S. economy.
Right, like we talked about,
yeah,
particularly agriculture.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's not quite as straightforward as Navarro makes it seem.
No, it's much more nuanced.
Okay. What about his second argument? The one about tariffs bringing back manufacturing jobs to the U.S.?
So the economic analysis is pretty skeptical of this assertion.
Okay.
It emphasizes that automation and technological advancements are far more significant drivers of manufacturing job losses than international trade. So even if tariffs were to incentivize some production to return to the U.S., it's likely to be in these highly automated facilities requiring fewer workers.
Right.
Moreover, companies might choose to relocate production to other low-cost countries instead of returning to the U.S.
Right.
Due to factors like higher labor costs and regulatory burdens here.
Right. So it's not just a simple matter of like bringing jobs back. It's much more complex than that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And finally, what about Navarro's belief that reducing the trade deficit strengthens the economy?
So the analysis suggests that focusing solely on reducing the trade deficit is kind of a misguided focus.
Okay.
It explains that a trade deficit in itself isn't necessarily a sign of economic weakness.
Okay.
The U.S. has experienced trade deficits for many years during periods of strong economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
A trade deficit can simply reflect robust consumer demand within the country.
Right.
Furthermore, foreign investment often flows in to offset trade deficits.
Right.
And most economists believe that the long-term focus should be on enhancing American competitiveness in the global market.
Right.
Rather than artificially trying to shrink the trade deficit through protectionist measures.
It's kind of a symptom, not necessarily the problem itself.
Exactly.
Okay, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Now, the text also talks about kind of the broader historical lessons regarding protectionism.
Mm-hmm.
It mentions the Smoot-Hawley tariff again.
Yeah.
The uncertainty that trade wars create.
Right.
And the negative impact on competition and innovation.
Yeah.
So can you just sum that up for us?
Yeah, so the text really underscores that historical evidence strongly suggests that protectionist trade policies tend to have negative consequences.
Okay.
The Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act is often cited as a prime example of how tariffs can severely backfire.
Mm-hmm.
Trade wars, by their very nature, create an unstable economic environment that discourages investment and disrupts supply chains. And when domestic industries are shielded from international competition, they have less incentive to innovate, improve efficiency, and ultimately provide better products and services to consumers.
Right.
So it can lead to stagnation.
It's almost like, you know, if you're not being pushed to be better, you just get complacent.
Exactly. Yeah, you become complacent.
Okay. Now, there's also this pretty strong section describing unfair tariffs as economic extortion.
Right.
Particularly when they're used by corrupt leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So what does the text say about that?
Yeah, this section really paints a concerning picture of tariffs being used as a tool for personal enrichment or political leverage rather than for legitimate economic purposes.
Right.
It describes scenarios where corrupt leaders might impose tariffs to punish political opponents.
Wow.
Or specific industries to benefit their own business interests as a form of retaliation or political manipulation, or even as a means of demanding bribes or kickbacks in exchange for favorable tariff treatment.
So it's almost like they're being used as a weapon.
Exactly. Yeah. And the text emphasizes that these practices severely undermine the principles of fair trade.
Right.
They can trigger damaging trade wars,
yeah,
stifle economic growth, distort markets, and contribute to political instability both domestically and internationally.
So really bad all around.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about tariffs.
We have, yeah.
And clearly they're a really multifaceted issue with, you know, significant potential downsides.
Yeah.
But let's circle back to Bernard's bigger argument here.
Okay.
About this new center political framework.
Yeah.
He also talks a lot about the role of media.
Right.
And the divisions that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he connect all these ideas?
So Bernard expresses this significant concern about the impact of what he calls citizen media. And the dynamics of a pay-for-click country on the quality of political discourse.
Okay.
He believes that this environment incentivizes the spread of of sensationalized
right.
and often biased information
mm-hmm.
contributing to the formation of echo chambers
yeah.
where individuals are primarily exposed to viewpoints that reinforce their existing beliefs.
Right.
He highlights the observation that, quote, conservatives are winning the biased media battle.
Right.
And he points to the prevalence of conspiracy theories
right.
as evidence of this fractured information landscape.
Yeah, it's almost like we're living in different realities.
Yeah, in a way.
Okay.
And he sees this media environment as actively exacerbating the political divisions
right.
that he believes a move towards the center could help to alleviate.
Right, right. Yeah. So media is kind of fueling the fire here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, he also makes some pretty strong statements
okay.
about the current political landscape. He says that the Trump administration acted, quote, in a highly reckless manner.
Mm-hmm.
And that, quote, the left has no logical answers.
Yeah.
So let's try to consider these statements
okay.
in the context of all the other information we have.
Right.
So first of all, the Trump administration acting recklessly.
Mm-hmm.
What evidence does the fiscal policy analysis offer to support that?
So the analysis highlights the substantial increase in the national debt
okay.
and deficit spending during the Trump administration.
Right.
It states that the deficit under Trump totaled a significant percentage of all previous presidents since Washington.
Wow. Okay.
And this level of fiscal expansion without corresponding revenue increases
right.
could certainly be interpreted as fiscally irresponsible.
Okay.
And therefore reckless
right.
by those advocating for a more fiscally conservative or centrist approach to government.
So basically spending a lot of money without raising taxes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it is.
And what about Bernard's statement that the left has no logical answers?
Right.
How might the fiscal policy analysis shed some light on that?
So I think Bernard's comment might reflect a broader frustration
well,
with a perceived lack of clear and politically viable solutions
right.
coming from the left right. to address significant national challenges, particularly in areas like fiscal responsibility.
Okay.
The fiscal policy analysis points out that both Republicans and Democrats have contributed to the current fiscal imbalance.
Right. So it's not just one side.
No, not at all.
Okay.
They've both been reluctant to make difficult choices regarding entitlement programs and tax policies.
Yeah, yeah.
So from Bernard's perspective, the left might be seen as lacking logical answers
okay.
in the sense of not offering concrete and politically feasible pathways to address these pressing fiscal issues,
right.
which contributes to the overall sense of political gridlock and inaction.
So it's almost like he's saying that both sides are stuck in their own ways.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the fiscal policy analysis,
mm-hmm.
It ends with this observation about the level of deficit spending.
Right.
And the statement that, quote, this is in the hands of the people now.
Yeah.
So how does this all connect to Bernard's call for the middle to take action?
So this really brings Bernard's core argument into sharp focus.
Okay.
He sees the current political environment characterized by partisan media, extreme ideologies,
right.
and this perceived failure of both ends of the political spectrum
yeah.
to address critical issues like fiscal responsibility as fundamentally unsustainable.
Okay.
His call for the middle to act
right.
is a direct response to this perceived crisis.
Right, right.
He believes that a resurgence of more centrist, pragmatic political leadership and engagement
okay.
is essential to bridge the widening divides and tackle the significant challenges facing the nation, including economic stability and social cohesion.
Yeah, yeah.
And that final thought in the fiscal policy analysis,
mm-hmm.
emphasizing the agency of the people,
right.
perfectly aligns with Bernard's plea for the moderate majority to step forward and demand a different, more centrist approach to governance.
So it's almost like he's saying, okay, you know, the politicians aren't doing it, so it's up to us.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so to kind of bring it all together,
right.
the core of Bernard's argument here
right.
is that a move back towards the center is vital
yeah.
for fostering greater cooperation
mm-hmm.
in what he sees as an increasingly fractured society.
Right.
And he blames this division, at least in part, on media, on the hardening of these extreme positions,
mm-hmm.
and on a perceived lack of pragmatic solutions from both sides, really.
Right, right.
And he thinks that things like tariffs are both a symptom and a driver of this broader problem.
Exactly.
Okay, so what do you think?
Well, I think Bernard views tariffs as a clear example of an economically questionable policy that's often driven by political motivations and amplified by misinformation in the media.
Right.
And he believes that these kinds of divisive policies, alongside those broader trends in political discourse that we talked about, are actively undermining the potential for consensus and progress.
Yeah.
And that a return to more centrist principles is necessary to chart a more stable and cooperative path forward.
Okay, so what can we do?
Right, that's the big question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bernard makes this really compelling case.
He does, yeah.
And it's clear that he's worried, right, about the direction we're headed in.
Yeah.
But he also says that it's up to us, right? Like we have the power to change things.
Right. The middle needs to act, he says.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I guess the question for you, our listener, is this: what can you do?
Yeah. What concrete steps can you take?